was equally volatile, except that it's also 24/7 and I wanted to do active trading, right? So there were 3 weeks where I was up all night just waiting for to reverse and for me to close my trade. And that's actually where the epiphany for Mudrex came in, that we said that this system is broken. No one can stay in front of screens 24/7. So we need some sort of automation to solve this problem. And crypto will be an asset class that's 24/7, will be an asset class that's global. So helping that automation is the problem that we wanted to solve. And hence, we started Mudrex. That's exactly why we started Mudrex. So that, you know, emotions and time are the two things that we can't control. And crypto is 24/7 and super volatile. So you will be hit.
Hello, everyone. And that is my guest, Adil Patel, the CEO of Mudrex. They're a Y Combinator startup building an algorithmic trading platform for cryptocurrency. They help crypto traders create, test and deploy their trading rules into automated trading algorithms without writing code. So we started back in 2011 reading the original white paper while still in college, and is now growing 40% month on month. So today you will find out how we got his first 1,000 customers, insights into the crypto scene in India, including crypto's massive potential for financial services, talks about dealing with the crypto non-believers, and talks about the best advice he received at YC. Now, he also shares his product strategies on how products should be built. And finally, I talked to Edel about my first week as a crypto trader. So we talk about portfolios and trading advice. Please note, I am not a financial advisor, so please seek financial advice. And if you're interested in buying crypto, please see the link on the show notes. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Edel. Thank you for coming to the Indian Startup Show today.
Hey, Neil. I'm very, very happy to be here. Thanks a lot for getting me on board.
Super excited to speak to you today. Please tell the listeners what you're building.
We are building Mudrex. It's a platform that helps traders and investors grow their crypto by different automated trading strategies. Awesome. So we are building algo trading platform for crypto.
Awesome stuff. Sounds exciting. How are things going? Can you share some stats?
Oh, so things are going excellent. We've been product out for the last 3 years. Our latest version of the product, the most updated one, launched about a year ago. And last 10 months, we've been growing about 40% month over month, either from a user perspective or from a revenue perspective, or, you know, the AUM perspective. We've got close to about 2,500 paying customers who pay us anywhere between $50 to $100 per month to use the algos created by different creators on our platform. But close to $10 million in assets under management now, mm-hmm, across these algos. And we do close to $300 million worth of trading every month, inching closer to the $1.5 billion cumulative trading volume as we speak.
Why crypto? What was the crypto light bulb moment for you then?
I read the original white paper way back in 2011 when I was still in college. Tried to purchase my first crypto in 2013 when I was at Deutsche. The crypto light bulb moment was sometime around 2017 when I was reintroduced to Ethereum and reintroduced to smart contracts and reintroduced to what was going on in this super volatile and large asset class. You know, just around May, June 2017, I started to do a lot of trading again in crypto. A bunch of my other co-founders were also doing the same thing. And we realized that crypto is clearly becoming this large, massive asset class that will probably change the way the world trades and invests in the future. We felt that this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to build out something large and meaningful, exactly what we wanted to do. So we jumped right in. Very early on, we felt that, you know, just getting people onboarded into crypto and solving the onboarding problem would be the bigger problem to tackle, which is why we originally started off by building out an exchange for India. Then Indian regulations came between, and then essentially the central bank in India banned crypto trading, which is when we pivoted to solving actually problems for global crypto traders and help build algos and automate their crypto trading. Simply because crypto is this large asset class, which is 24/7. There are hundreds of assets, thousands of exchanges and so on and so forth, right? So it's difficult for a user to trade over there.
What is the latest on the government's ban on crypto?
Yeah, so as such, India never really banned crypto. The central bank just can't use banking channels to transact, which means that it didn't ban, but it severely handicapped crypto. But then that's got reversed. And now there are some other news of some other regulations that's on the way. But all the news that I'm hearing is actually on the positive side. What I'm hearing is that people are trying to figure out a way to sandbox and allow certain companies and certain users and up to a certain limit to you know, just start at least play around and dabbling with crypto, which is a great step ahead, right? India has always, you know, historically been on the forefront from payments perspectives and you know, financial services perspectives. And I don't see any reason why that will change.
What is a crypto trading bot then?
Let's just first talk about a bot and then we'll put crypto.
Yeah.
Essentially just a machine following a certain set of rules. The rules that you define that tells a machine when to buy and when to sell. There are different ways in which you can define these rules. So for example, simple way would be that if the average of the last 5 prices is higher than the average of the last 10 prices, then buy. Similarly, sell. But there are some other ways, interesting ways in which you can also define these rules, right? It means that if Elon Musk ever tweets that Dogecoin is going to go to the moon, broadly, a crypto bot is essentially defining rules, identifying when do you want to enter, when do you want to exit, and create this system around it so that you can clearly decide when are you entering, when are you exiting, and as a result, you're not susceptible to these large, volatile, massive movements in crypto that drain you emotionally more so.
Right. And who's this specifically targeted for then?
Originally, when we started, we were focused extremely on the trader side. What started to happen was that we built out this tool. It was like a no-code editor that you would use to create your trading algos. And we started to focus on traders who were anyways doing all of their things manually by looking at charts, by looking at numbers and deciding to enter or exit and so on and so forth. Right? So we focused on traders very early on. And we launched this in October 2018. So that's now close to 2.5 years ago. By December, we got our first 100 users. By January, we got selected for Y Combinator. So we went over there, spent 3 odd months building the product out. And by February, we had about 500 users on our platform. Right? And that was good enough for us to start doing some analysis and trying to understand what users are doing, what they're not doing. And 2-3 things started to come up very clearly at that. The first thing that started to happen was that we saw that users were using our product a lot, but a vast majority of users were very, very bad at trading. And they were not that good at, you know, making money consistently and having returns consistently and so on and so forth. In hindsight, this actually seems fairly obvious. Right? Like the normal average retail trader who doesn't have the skill and the experience and the practice to do trading are actually pretty bad at trading. And it's not something that's crypto specific. It's specific across asset classes, whether it be equities, whether it be commodities, whether it be FX. This is true globally. So that's one thing that started to happen. And on the other end, what we saw was that we had created a community. And on that community, users are sharing their trading strategies, trading algos, asking each other for help. At least some folks were doing really well. And those some folks were getting a lot of requests from all the other traders about how could they start investing in their algos. Any trader who has any algo is never going to give his algo away, right? Because that's his IP. If the algo, anyone can make money from it. On the other hand, any investor is never going to give away money to a random dude over the internet, right? Especially in crypto. No one does that. So there was this clear kind of sort of a marketplace opportunity that came up in front of us. Where on the one end, we felt that there were these algo traders and creators who could build out these algos and publish them. Then we do the job of curation and figuring out which algo is good, which algo is bad, and give like a simplistic user interface for any average investor to go and invest. And an investor can just do one click and put in money. So that's what we did. We launched this marketplace in September 2019. Quickly did improve, got a lot of feedback, launched a version 2 in March 2020. Things have just been skyrocketing since then.
Awesome stuff.
So,
what did the first prototype look like then?
The first prototype way back in October 2018 was just this, you know, kind of a drag and drop canvas where people would select and drag and drop these blocks. It was very clunky. Nothing worked on mobile. And the only thing that you can do was create your strategy and then literally stare at it. Like we had no backtesting, we had no live trading and so on and so forth. But the idea was that we spent a lot of time just first perfecting how can people create what they want to create in a very seamless and intuitive manner, right? Because it's the act of creation that we wanted to incentivize and grow. And then once creators started creating more and more and more algos, and they started testing them and then trying to figure out what works and doesn't work, we slowly and steadily continue to improve on our UI. In fact, our latest version of the UI was just launched 3 weeks back, where we finally went mobile friendly and now everything works pretty well on mobile as well.
Awesome stuff. Yeah, how did you get your first customers then? Because obviously you launched it as a marketplace.
So when we launched in October 2018, we literally had no one, right? Like just like the four or five of us co-founders and team using the product, right? But there was clearly a need for it Because what started to happen is we started posting about this in different Discord channels and on Reddit, on Twitter. And a lot of people started getting a lot of curiosity and they started reaching out to us. And they wanted help, so we helped them set things up. They wanted a community support, so we set up a community. And I think for our first, at least till our first 1,000 customers, the go-to market was literally going to various Discord channels, looking at what problems people are facing, trying to narrow down and pinpoint who has a problem that we can solve, and then literally dropping that person a direct message on Discord or on Reddit or on Twitter saying that, hey, you have this problem that we saw on this XYZ place. Come check this cool tool that we built out that solves your problem. And yeah, we can give you like this 100 credits free. So that you can try it out for free as well. Mm-hmm. So that's our first 1,000 customers.
Nice. And did you have any like user experience issues at the start then? You mentioned feedback.
Oh, of course. Like the product would fail almost every other day. There were tech challenges and there were product challenges and so on and so forth. But I think the biggest thing and the most valuable thing that we've done is we created a fantastic community on Discord. Like today, our community is a community of over 2,500 traders and investors who are super active, who continue to give us feedback. Very early days, that community was a very small 50-100 member community, right? But super powerful, super interesting in terms of the fact that community is essentially what decided our roadmap. We didn't have a product team. Like literally the entire product team in our company is just me. And our product team was our community that came back and told us that this is what you've made, now change this. This is what you've made, now change this. You've done all of these things nice, now make this, and so on and so forth, right? So we've been super reliant on our community for feedback. And that community has essentially given us everything that we need from a product roadmap perspective.
Awesome. So in terms of the product then, do I just get one bot then and tweak it myself, or how does it work then?
If you're investing in crypto today as an investor, the only place that you can invest is just buy some coins and hodl them, that people do. We felt that that's extremely risky considering how volatile crypto is, right? Like that's the last thing that you should be doing if you're wanting to invest your funds in crypto. What we felt that a better alternative was to give these algos, which were essentially now like small funds, effectively these are like mutual funds for crypto, where you could put your money and the algo would automatically enter in and enter out and allocate your funds across different coins and take care of the money management for you. So the investment part was what we were trying to solve it. And as a result, just like how in normal equities, people invest across multiple different mutual funds because multiple different mutual funds have different return patterns. On Mudrex as well, people invest across multiple different algos or multiple different funds because they provide different kind of sort of return profiles. And that diversification as well comes in, right? So I regularly tell this to our users that diversify across 3 to 5 different algos. Just let it be, don't intervene, and you'll get like 7 to 10% returns on an average per month. And that's what we've been seeing. That's what I've been seeing on my personal portfolio. That's what we've been seeing on our company portfolio.
Why is crypto so volatile?
Well, crypto is volatile on the one end. To be honest, actually, not all cryptos are volatile. Cryptos are actually fairly steady, to be honest. In the last 6-7 months or so, we've been in the middle of a massive bull run where a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of excitement and a lot of hype is being generated, but mostly from the institutional side. At the other end, the reason why crypto is super volatile is crypto is still a market that's driven more by greed and fear, right? It's still not driven by core values, by cash flow, by news and so on and so forth, unlike the equities market. It's also still fairly early. The market cap for most tokens is very small. So even a small purchase of, let's say, $100,000 by one guy will essentially spike the market up by 1-2%, right? Which is insane volatility. There are a confluence of these all different forces that causes crypto to be volatile. But it's getting better and better and better every month as we speak.
Yeah. So in sort of, obviously, it's very volatile, but how would you sort of like manage expectations then?
Yeah, I think that's what is super important for people to understand. Because the difference is that in nominal equities, you would probably be okay with like a couple of percent moves, but a 4-5% move will shock you for a large stock, right? In crypto, 4-5% movements up and down is routine. From an expectation management perspective, firstly is what you should understand is that how historically have things performed. So that you can understand what you expect in the future. So if, let's say, your trade is open and then it suddenly gone down 5%, but in your system, historically, you've seen multiple times it goes down 5% and then comes back up, then it should be nothing to worry about. The ideal thing from an expectation management perspective should be that you should trade crypto or crypto trading as normal equities. Just try and make sure that you enter when you think that the system that you try to create for trading is aligned with what you've got now. Similarly, exit when you know you've met your profit goals or you've met your stop loss goals and not just be greedy and hang around. I typically tell people that if you're doing active trading and if you're allocating funds on the algos on Mudrex via the passive trading setup that we have, you should expect about 7 to 10% returns per month, which is still insane, right? Like 7 to 10% per month is something that you'd never get. It's essentially doubling your money in a year. But that's what I typically let people No, and that's how most users set their expectations on me.
So I entered the crypto game on Monday for the purposes of this podcast interview. I spent some money on Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Yes.
Went really well Monday, Tuesday. I thought, oh, this is quite easy. So I decided to buy some more coins on, I think it was Chainlink and Engine, which is some sort of gaming token, which is quite interesting, actually. Again, went through the roof Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday all sort of crashed because I think Turkey decided to ban cryptocurrency. So it's definitely volatile, and that's just in 1 week. But now it just keeps going up and down, up and down, up and down. Yeah, is that your experience as well? Because you've been in it a lot longer than I have been doing it. I've just been doing it for 1 week.
Well, to be honest, this is exactly why we started Mudrex, right? Like, like your first week was very similar to my first week. Mm. My first, the only difference was in around May, June 2017. The level of sophistication available today was not at all available back then. And crypto was equally volatile, except that it's also 24/7. And I wanted to do active trading, right? So there were 3 weeks where I was up all night just waiting for to reverse and for me to close my trade. And that's actually where the epiphany for Mudrex came in, that we said that this system is broken. No one can stay in front of screens 24/7. So we need some sort of automation to solve this problem. And crypto will be an asset class that's 24/7, will be an asset class that's global. So helping that automation is the problem that we wanted to solve, and hence we started Mudrex. That's exactly why we started Mudrex, so that, you know, emotions and time are the two things that we can't control, and crypto is 24/7 and super volatile, so you will be hit hard by both of them. Might as well build systems and algos so that you don't need to intervene again and again and again.
So what advice would you give for me for my second week then? Hold or buy some new coins or what?
So the advice that I would give is that if you're not doing active trading, which means that if you're not looking to enter and exit constantly, you should buy things for the longer run.
Right.
And crypto is super early, right? Like this is literally the first 10 years of crypto and we're looking at an asset class that's going to massively expand and mature over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years, right? So whatever you do today, in my head, should be from the longer term perspective only. So in that case, you should buy in and keep it even better, buy in, allocate it across different algos on Mudrex, and we'll help you grow that crypto.
Nice one.
Allocate it to some bots on Mudrex, and we'll help you grow your Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely. Help me out here for my second week. Am I right in thinking just put majority of my money in Ethereum and Bitcoin, and then the rest in these altcoins because they're fairly new, aren't they?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of things are fairly new, but a lot of things are maturing and growing fairly quickly as well. My personal allocation is that I've kept about 50-60% of my allocation in BTC for the longer run. Mm. So of course, the long term value, right? Then my other 30-odd% is on Ethereum. Again, I'm a big believer and a big fan of the underlying technology, and Ethereum is the market leader in terms of smart contracts as such itself. And then the other 20% are essentially bets against Ethereum. So BNB with their BSC chain is coming up fairly quickly. There is the Polkadot with the DOT ecosystem. There is Cardano with the ADA ecosystem, and so on and so forth. So I've allocated across those just as a hedge in case Ethereum is not able to continue its rally and upside, and some of these other ones start to end up being large and big enough to challenge Ethereum. We also have our own company allocation as such. Treasury fund is actually very different. Now, if you think of it from a treasury fund perspective, a treasury is supposed to be for actual utilizations for the company, right? Like we have to use it for salaries and so on and so forth. So as a result, it's not like we can take 20-year bets with the treasury money. Now, because it can't take 20-year bets with the treasury money, a large amount of our treasury fund is just in USDT. Mm. And what we've done is then allocated this USDT to trade across different algos on Mudrex. And our treasury fund has been doing about 7-8% returns per month, growing the USDT only. So from a treasury fund perspective, we are super risk averse. And we don't want anything that's in the long run. We just want returns to be balanced and backed out in USDT at every month. And I'm assuming a lot of your audience will also have that kind of a perspective, right? They just want dollar gains. They don't care whether the BTC is going to be 100 times larger over the next 20 years or not.
It's very addictive though, when you watch the YouTube videos.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, a part of it is just the rush of making money, right? Like that instant dopamine hit that you get by making some returns, by putting in a decision that you made, is what causes it to be addictive, and what causes it what causes you to just continue to go on and do it again and again and again. That's a part of the crypto game.
What was it like when you first invested then? And you must have got that rush.
Oh, absolutely. And in hindsight, 80% of the tokens where I had invested, not the amount. So I'd done this entire exercise. Okay. I remember this very clearly. In the first week of January 2018, I spent like a week reading white papers, going through a lot of documents and figuring out where should I allocate my funds to. I eventually decided to allocate a small amount across 10 different cryptos. 8 of those 10 don't exist today. So yeah, emotionally draining. But the bet was also like that only, that probably 7 or 8 of those 10 won't exist. And you'll make money of the remaining 2-3. And that's what happened. I made money of the remaining 2-3.
So what can Bitcoin go to then?
Bitcoin today is at a $1 trillion market. And its price is at roughly about $60,000. The primary challenger, or the primary asset class that Bitcoin itself is challenging, is gold, right? And gold has like a $20-30 trillion market cap globally. So thinking that Bitcoin is going to be a store of value and is going to replace gold as a store of value, the base target is that Bitcoin is probably 3% or 5% of where it is. The beauty is that a lot of lifetime Bitcoin that's going to be mined is already mined. So it's not like there are more BTC that's going to be produced. So any growth that's going to happen is just going to be on the price side, right? And that's why BTC is always increasing kind of a product inherently because of the way it's designed, and there is scarcity involved. If let's say BTC's market cap is going to go to 20 trillion over the next 20 years, then 600,000 is the lower end of the spectrum. Then we are looking at $1 million price range as such. In fact, like most people expect that this year BTC will continue to be just range bound between 45K and 55K. We will end up seeing BTC going to about 70-80K, maybe also coming back to about 40-odd K before it just continues to stabilize.
What can go wrong then?
I mean, from a crypto perspective, from a BTC perspective, what can go wrong in the longer run? Today, something is a store of value only if trust is there in the system, right? And there are various reasons why people can lose trust. There can be tech-related issues. There are just usage and utility-related issues that can go wrong. Or literally, a lot of the central banks world over will just decide to ban crypto. Those are some of the things that can go wrong. But all of those things are highly unlikely now. Now that crypto is already large and meaningful, we've already started to see a lot of institutional allocation coming in. And so on and so forth.
Now, let's talk about India then, because obviously, you know, you said it's a $1 trillion market and there's a billion people who live in India. That's huge. Be a billionaire soon.
I hope so. Well, that's the goal to get to, but the bigger goal is to make many more billionaires along the way. Yeah, that's the aim, right? So, going back to India, I think India has massive potential. And that's not only from a crypto perspective, but like financial services in general perspective. The entire financial services asset class and investing asset class in India itself is very small, like barely a couple of percent of Indians own equity, lever on crypto. So potential is immense. But at the same time, before potential, there needs to be education, right? And I think just access and information decimation of where do you invest, how do you invest, how do you decide what amount of portfolio should go in crypto, in equities, in bond markets, and so on and so forth. That's the primary challenge for India right now. And that's what a lot of people are trying to solve. Just informing and educating and making people more and more and more financially responsible. That's what people are trying to do. And I think that's where our regulators also come in, right? Like the regulators in India are also have actually a fairly tough job. On the one end, they've got multiple newer and newer and newer financial products that are being launched world over. And on the other end, the job of a regulator is to make sure that the retail investor is not duped, right? So making sure that the retail investor understands what they're getting into is a challenge to solve for. And that's what I think our regulators are struggling with right now. How do you balance information dissemination? What do you allow? What do you don't allow? And how do you make sure that the average retail investor just doesn't get scammed?
But if, let's say, you're the prime minister, someone made you the prime minister tomorrow, what would you do? What's the first thing you would do in terms of crypto?
What I would do is I would set up a framework, and I would set up a sandbox in which companies can build and grow and develop things out. And I would put in certain rules that clearly define what is allowed and what is not allowed. The state in which we are currently is that there is a flux, right? There is uncertainty, and uncertainty is a killer of innovation. If things are uncertain, people will never be able to allocate or never be able to decide when and how to allocate serious amounts of money. Because not like people don't want to. It's just that because things are uncertain, people don't want to be on the other end. And if there is a 5% chance of losing out your entire money, people don't want that. If I were the prime minister, I would go out and set up some clear mandate, some clear rules, and then let the ecosystem evolve.
What about those crypto non-believers then?
Well, I think there are two parts to the camp, right? On the one end, there are people who philosophically don't believe in crypto, who are fundamentally against the argument that you should be your own bank and you should have your reliability, and the state is what should control money. So there's a philosophical argument, which I think will only change as the actual benefits of crypto start happening across different countries and various economies, and people start being lifted out of poverty and start getting their financial independence. That's the one end. The other kind of naysayers are just people who think that the technology is not there yet. And I kind of sort of agree over there. The underlying tech of our crypto and blockchain is not there yet, but there is massive progress happening. A lot of work happening world over, and like millions of developers working on solving that problem. And I think that's just a matter of time. It'll just take a few more years where things become fast enough, scalable enough for thousands and millions of people to actually use crypto for the purpose it is supposed to be used to. And that's the part where DeFi is growing and a lot of happening in decentralized finance.
A hell of a lot going on there. Going back to the crypto bot then, are you saying that the crypto bot is better than a human being then?
Absolutely. Like I can bet a significant portion of my money. In fact, I already have, right? I've literally put all my crypto across the bots on Mudrex. And the reason why I say that, algos are significantly more consistent is the part that I'm looking for. There are human traders who will be able to beat algos and in terms of getting a higher return. But whether they'll be able to do it consistently month over month, year over year, is the problem, right? And we know this for sure. Like you can just look at how mutual fund managers perform, right? One out of 95% of mutual fund managers have a loss-making year once every 5 years, which is crazy, right? That's not the level of consistency that you look for from the best in the world. And mutual fund managers are supposed to be the best people to manage your money. So that's the problem. And that's the challenge that we are trying to solve at Mudrex as well. We think that bots are super consistent and super reliable. And the reason why you should allocate funds to a bot is because you're looking for consistent returns and consistent gains and not outlier returns and gains. If you're looking for outlier returns and gains, might as well go out and gamble. But if you're looking to invest and steadily grow your portfolio, then algos is the way to go ahead.
So you're comfortable with your bot executing trades while you're sleeping?
Absolutely comfortable with that. In fact, now, since the last year or so, the various algos that have been using my money have probably done close to 5,000 trades on my exchange account. And none of them have gone wrong. So there's no worry over there.
Awesome stuff. Good stuff. Glad to hear you're sleeping well. you mentioned...
Yeah. In fact, I'm sleeping far better now as compared to before, right? Because earlier I was just staring the screen, waiting for the price to move so that I could exit and go to sleep.
That's what I'm doing. I'm sort of refreshing the screen every 2 seconds here.
I know.
Yeah, you mentioned Y Combinator. Talk about that process.
I think YC was very, very instrumental in us helping get to where we are today, right? Just going back to October, November, 2018, and we were just reaching out to our first set of people, asking them to try out the product and play around with the product. As soon as we reached out to them and we even told them that just test this product out, see how it goes, give us some feedback, half of the people would just reject us, saying that this is crypto, you are messaging me, you have some inherent ulterior motive, I will not use your product because you're going to scam me someday. So the first thing I think that YC helped us get is it significantly solved that trust barrier. So it immediately helped us be recognized that this is way more trustworthy product, and as a result, people started using it significantly more. I think all the other gains of YC were definitely the network. And in YC, we today have close to 40-50 crypto companies. In fact, one of the first crypto companies of YC, which is Coinbase, listed just a couple of days ago, right? Yeah. And now at $100 billion market cap, and Coinbase was like the torchbearer for all the other following YC companies to come in and help us guide and so on and so forth about what do we do, what do we don't do in terms of crypto. Mm. That has been, that network has in itself been super useful for us.
Yeah. How did the product change during your time at Y Combinator then?
So I think during YC, we were super trader focused. While we were at YC, was this epiphany of, you know, moving from traders to the investors, moving from just a SaaS-based tool to a marketplace and so on and so forth started to come forward. And like the product that you see today would not have been where it is had we not been at YC and had we not gone through the exercise and focused on growing and focused on solving our user problems.
Because you moved to Silicon Valley for 3 months. How was that?
Oh, fantastic. In fact, we were there for much longer. We were actually there till March last year, building the product out. We just had to come back to India because of all the COVID nonsense that started happening. So Silicon Valley, of course, this humming place where a lot of the growth happens and like just the energy is different. Trying to replicate that energy back now in Bangalore.
What was the best advice you got from Y Combinator?
One of the best advice that they've given again and again and again is just continue to focus on your users. So building on your community, focusing on your users, hearing what their problems are and not going on a tangent of your own was by far the most important advice that we got and of course what we adhered to. That's literally what's driven our product acceptance today, right? Today we're growing 40% month over month purely because our users love the product and they love it so much that they tell their friends to come on board. We don't spend any money on marketing yet. And this growth is purely that driven by that, right? And that's a powerful engine for you to have.
How fast are you growing?
40% month over month in terms of revenue. We are, in fact, February was the first month where we broke even. And Jan, Feb and March is like my first quarter when we are profitable. It's like, this is literally the first time I'm working in a company that's broken even and profitable in the last 10 years of my working across different places, right? Even the 2 years. Deutsche was a loss-making company.
How did you celebrate?
We opened up a couple of beers and then drank that, discussed our future and then went back to work.
Okay. Talk about the Y Combinator demo day. That must have been really exciting. Yeah. Talking in front of all those rich, famous billionaires, VCs, etc., etc.
Yeah, I think there are two parts to that demo day process. One is just talking and pitching in front of the stage. But I think a lot more exciting happens outside, behind the stage. Where you're actually having a lot of those conversations with a lot of the VCs and a lot of the investors. So it's a fun, crunch, intense 24 hours where you go through a lot of pitching, a lot of deal making, a lot of discussions and conversations. And what you also get is a lot of feedback. So yeah, I think that was also pretty useful for us, but not super useful though, I must say. Primarily because the product lifecycle that we were looking for was much longer. We weren't necessarily looking to raise a lot of money at demo day. And that's actually what we ended up doing. We ended up raising a small amount of funds just after demo day. We did a small seed round kind of then we raised another sort of small seed round last year. And now the company is profitable and break even, right? Mm. Now, why do we need money?
Yeah, you mentioned deal making then. What advice would you give our listeners about deal making then? Because they may be in a similar situation to you. You can't say yes to everything, well, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I think what's important is to say no to most people and say yes to just a few. And over there, what's even more important is not to say yes to the people who's giving you most money, but actually say yes to the people who are going to help you out and grow more and more and more, right? Like the first 10 checks that we got, but steadfast, focused on just getting the right angels on board would help us grow the business and give us feedback, give us the right connects and give us the right network so that we could grow this business out. So very early on, I would suggest focus more on people who can help you build and grow because that has compounding effect. The money that people give doesn't.
Yeah, interesting. It's been a great journey from reading that white paper about Bitcoin to getting in front of Y Combinator. How do you reflect on this journey?
It's been chaotic. And it's of course been a wild ride, but along the way, I think I've personally learned a lot about, not only about building products and growing and scaling up things in crypto, but more so about the human connection and building trust and building communities and just speaking with people all over the world, trying to understand their problems and so on. So that has been the part that I cherished, that I cherished the most in these last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
We've got users from 90 different countries. We've got a Discord that has people from Korea, China, Australia, New Zealand, Italy, US, Brazil, like world over.
Just for our listeners, what skills do you need to be a product person then?
Well, I think a product person is a mix of three things broadly. On the one end, a product person should be a great listener in terms of not only listening and understanding what user issues are, but actually trying to figure out what the underlying root causes of what the user is saying is. For example, a user might tell you that change this button to blue and make it bigger, but actually the root cause might be that he's trying to use it on mobile and it's not mobile friendly and so on. One part is just being a great listener and trying to understand what the problems are. The second part is actually being a great coordinator. And I say this a lot of times, that a product manager is half of the job of a product manager is just to be a glorified coordinator. Because at the end of the day, what a product manager is trying to do is trying to understand users' problems, trying to convert those problems into fixable solutions, and then getting the tech team and the support team and the business team to get those solutions implemented in the product. So coordination and communication is this other second big kind of sort of insight that a product manager should have. And then I think third thing that a lot of times is what people don't get is that being a product manager is also a super creative job, right? Because when I say creative, it doesn't necessarily mean being good at design and so on and so forth. Creative, it means being better at problem solving and getting to creative solutions of user problems. That's what I think is what most product managers or most product folks underrate. Because, you know, communications will happen, you'll become better at listening, but that creative problem solving is the difference between a good product manager and a great product.
Well, obviously, people can build products and build features, but what about killing products and killing features? What's your decision-making process behind that?
Well, there's a principle that at least the teams at Google follow, that if 80% of users are not using something actively, then kill it and move ahead to the next problem that you're trying to solve. Killing is, I think, actually more important than deciding what to pick up next, because once you remove things from your focus, you can focus on the things that are actually moving the needle and helping you grow and helping and solving users' problems, and just continue to focus on moving and improving that.
And say someone listening wants to become a product manager, but they don't have any experience. What advice would you give them? How can they prove it to potential employers that they've got what it takes to be a product manager?
So I think the starting point for most product managers globally is that they need to be creators and they need to be problem solvers. Most companies require problem solving as a skill set for product managers. So even if you've not done product directly, if you've at least done problem solving in tangential fields, that itself is a good starting point for you to have. So working in, let's say, as a business analyst, as a data analyst, trying and solving challenging, interesting problems over there, which require you to be creative and which require you to understand the business and so on and so forth, would be a great starting point for a lot of people trying to do product. Other angle at which people can start doing product management is just by actually focusing on community, building communities and taking care of communities that way. Because building communities teaches you a lot about how do you solve user problems, how do you build user empathy, which is, as I said, a key part of product management. So that's
Have you got like a product strategy then? Do you have like a playbook?
Absolutely. So in fact, there is this charter that we've created in-house, which is a guidelines of how products should be built. And all products start with a problem and all products end with data. We typically start with clearly outlining what the problem is, then brainstorming what potential solutions are, then going down and looking at which of these potential solutions are the fastest to implement and can give us scope for furthest improvement in the future. Then it's just about building. And then once you've built it, you go back and check and see whether what you built and the solution or the hypothesis that you had while you made the solution actually works or not. And then based on what the results are, you either go and improve or you go and start from scratch again. It's like a fairly standard process, but we've created this entire charter that every product goes through internally.
Yeah, sounds good. Seems to be going well.
And that actually allows us to invest in multiple different things and start small, iterate and improve and execute quickly, then pick the winners and leave the losers and double down and grow.
Last few questions then. What advice would you give to our first-time founders?
The focus for first-time founders should always be on their users. This is the advice that YC gave us, and this is golden. This is what a lot of people would tell you. But a lot of times what happens is that first-time founders get bogged down with, you know, fundraising and pitching and what my impression should be and what my title should be. To be honest, none of that matters, guys. Like, if you're not solving a real value problem, then everything else doesn't matter. So focus on your users, get feedback, try and understand whether you're actually solving a problem or not. That's what matters the most. And that's what you should focus on. Everything else is just a consequence, like fame, money, et cetera, will all come. As long as you're solving problems, everything else will happen.
Awesome stuff. Is there any sort of blogs or books or YouTube channels that have helped you?
In fact, every single person who actually joins my team, I actually give them a series of books to read and listen. And these are some of my favorite books as well. So there is this book called As Thinking Fast and Slow. Absolutely brilliant. Daniel Kahneman. I think it's for me, it's a Bible of behavioral psychology. And as a result, something that every single product manager should read. Then there is another book by a professor called as Daniel Ariely called as Predictably Irrational. Really, really love that book. And then the third book that I also suggest to everyone joining in is this book called as Getting to Yes, which just talks about how do you resolve conflicts and how do you focus on solving the problem and not get stuck at your positions or opinions. These three are my de facto books that I literally gift every single person that joins our company. To go out and read.
How did you?
Very fundamental and lifelong books.
Yeah. It must be, obviously, working with a startup must be quite stressful. How do you deal with those moments of stress?
Well, I think in moments of stress, it's important to always focus on the big picture, right? And go back and think about why are you doing what you're doing? Because it's very easy to get bogged down with, you know, this is not working, that is not working, this is breaking, and so on and so forth. Or this is a deadline that we need to meet, but it's not going. And the only way to power through periods of those stress is if you continue to focus on what the long-term vision is and why are you wanting to do what you're wanting to do. And as a result of that, why this piece getting executed in the right way is important. Mm-hmm. That internal motivation is I think that's super important.
Yeah. Well,
you know, of course, you need to have fun while you're doing it.
Yeah. What motivates you then?
So it's stressful. Well, to be honest, what motivates me is that we started doing Mudrex, we've now stumbled upon this product that has the potential to change the way the world is investing, right? And that's actually what motivates me today. Till now, as a normal retail investor, the only place that you can go out and do investing is just buy a bunch of mutual funds or at best put in money in an index. What we are trying to do fundamentally changes that. What we are trying to do is we are trying to create this economy where individual traders and creators can create their algos. Their algos can have consistent, reliable performance, which can be measured. And as a result of that, to some extent predicted. And hence, if you are able to create a large economy on the creator side, we can get more and more and more investors to invest in these algos, get better and better financial returns, and as a result of that, get to financial independence quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So big picture of changing the way the world invests, it is what keeps me moving.
Yeah, no, it's good. So in, say, I don't know, 50 years' time, will it be just all crypto bots trading against each other, buying and selling? You'll have your trading crypto bot and I'll have my crypto bot.
Well, I mean... I think it will.
Mm.
And it won't necessarily be, when you say a bot, we go back to the definition that it will be certain rules being traded and automatically based on what certain people have defined. So I think it will. A vast majority of it will get to there very quickly.
But what do your friends and family think of this? Do they understand what you're doing? Have you tried to explain it to them?
It took me some time to just make them understand what we're trying to do. And I think my parents don't really understand till now what I'm doing. But as long as they see that I'm making money and I'm happy, they're happy.
Well, let's leave it on that note then. For people who want more information on Mudrex and yourself, what must they do?
Well, just if you can very easily reach out to me on edul@mudrex.com or just drop me a message on LinkedIn. We are very, very open. We are very, very accessible. Reach out to us on Twitter. Reach out to us on our email addresses. We'll be very quickly be able to respond. mudrex.com. That's where you can get all the info.
Why is it called Mudrex?
Oh, we started off as a cryptocurrency exchange in India. And Mudra literally means token. So Mudra Exchange got shortened to Mudrex. The name was catchy. Our users loved it. So we stuck around with it, even though we've now pivoted to do a lot of things apart from just being an exchange of tokens.
Awesome stuff. Edel, thank you for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's keep in touch. thanks to Edel for coming on the show today. For more information, please go to mudrex.com. Thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and I shall be back next week. If you are building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet at IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. Love to get. Thank you and goodbye.